For those that are new, the series that we've been giving at this time on this day has been on Bishul B'Shabbos. We have finished the inyan of the hot plate, the warming drawer, and now we're moving towards the crock pot, which is a very, very interesting inyan and a very nogei lamaisa. Especially, the only reason why I kept it here and it hasn't been cleaned is because I'm lazy. But it will help us in explaining how this works. Okay. So the way a basic crockpot works, I'm sorry I didn't photocopy, I'm just a little lazy today, but you know what the way a crockpot works, and better as yet, we'll show you. And the reason why this is important is because this came out to be, as we'll see a little bit later, the last psak of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Aruch. This is a crock pot.
That's nasty.
It is? It will be clean. This is a crock pot from Thursday night. And there's a little bit, if you want, there's a little kishka in there. Okay. So, I'll put the cover on, it won't smell at all. So, what's important here is a number of different items that are going to be questionable. So I'm going to show it first, I'll put it away. So number one, we're going to ask the question about what has to be done with the knob. Number one. Number two, if I want to have Friday night chillin' but use it for Shabbos, and I'm going to take this out, this is the way most crock pots are, does anything have to happen over here? A blech or something along those lines. Furthermore, just so you understand, but we'll get to it shortly, Shlomo Zalman's big problem here was something called hatmana. And that is going to be trapping of heat. And obviously, as you see, when this happens, it's insulated. No heat can escape. That's how it cooks so beautifully. So that is going to be our essential question tonight. Now somebody can bring this back to the dining room. Thank you so much. From last week and the week before Shir, but we'll just review once again, the two general clauses that until now we've been worried about has been mechzek imevashel, right? That it looks like cooking, and gufa keduma, that we're afraid that you're going to go ahead and cook with it. So let's just do the easier one, right? Mechzek imevashel. So mestama, this is not ordinary cooking, even though people use crockpots all the time to cook. Okay, that's 100% true. You know, as I like to say, crockpots. What?
Yeah,
I was going to say, crockpots were not invented by Jews. Crockpot is a way for somebody who's going to work in the morning to put it something in and to set it and forget it, as Ronco likes to say. So you can make a chillant, you can make a stew, you can make chicken, and you put it on low, and you put it up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and Baruch Hashem, you come back for dinner at 6, 7 o'clock. And it's delicious, it's not burnt, there's no safety hazard. I mean, maybe there's safety hazard, but fine. So that is an ordinary cooking. So why would it be allowed? So there, potentially, the reason why we could say it's mutter is because it is a cooking process, but it is, as it's called, a slow cooking process. And therefore, we're not so concerned that somebody's going to go ahead and do much to it. So one could argue with this. I really haven't seen many poskim that are so bothered by nirakim avashel because it's not the ordinary way people are doing cooking. And clearly, it would be very difficult for a person to wake up on Shabbos morning and say, oh my God, I want cholent, I forgot to put it up, and make himself a cholent that will be ready in time for lunch. I mean, it's almost impossible. If you put it on the stovetop, that actually is possible. I didn't realize this until this year. We had an emergency situation in the yeshiva. Emergency situations obviously involve when somebody like Miller or somebody else decides not to make the cholent the night before, and we were going to have no cholent on Thursday night. And the finance director of the yeshiva, the tzaddik, he said there is no way that the yeshiva boys cannot have cholent on Thursday night, somewhere in the Mishnah Berurah, I don't know where. And so we decided to go ahead and order cholent. Well, we didn't go ahead. Somebody decided. And I said, I'm the finance director, I will not allow that. I will make the cholent myself. The only problem was it was like Thursday afternoon. So I asked the chef, I says, you have any eitzos? She's like, yeah, just put it on top of the fire, put water in it, it'll be fine. And it actually was delicious. That was the best challah we had the year. Oh no, it's because I cooked it. Okay, so fine. So that's number one. So I guess because of the slow cooking process, we're not so worried about it. That's number one. Number two, is it near Gufa Ketuma? That clearly is a problem, right? Because it has dials on it. When we talked about the hot plate, so we said you got to cover the dials, or now most hot plates are made, especially the quote-unquote Jewish ones, they're made without any temperatures. So you got no problem there. They have no dials on them. So here, it would appear that one would have to cover the dials so that you don't come to do anything with it. One could argue that it probably doesn't matter so much if you actually change from slow to high, because it doesn't do much. Again, what we're concerned about is the following, the example that I gave, right? Shabbos morning comes, you come home from shul, and you see the cholent's not cooked. Oy vey. So now you're not going to have cholent, Shabbos lunch. Oy vey. So you quickly put it on high. So the truth is, not much is going to happen. If you increase the fire, mamish, you know, so then you really could have it cooked. Here, I don't know if it's going to do much. Okay, but that's so we really should cover the knobs. So, but the third issue, which we haven't discussed by anything else, we alluded to this in our previous year because we spoke about the question I had about the warming drawer, is there any hatmana there? Because the warming drawer, as you know, is you put the food in many cases, because it's generally a smaller drawer, so you put as much as you can in, and you shove it in, and you close it. So isn't that hatmana? Because it's enveloped. So we explained that the way that safety features work nowadays is really nothing that has hatmana, especially that type of thing, there has to be some sort of ventilation for it. That's the way ovens certainly are created today, so that there is no issues. But that's also, on the other side, besides the problem of Nurukim Mevashel, why, Mechzikim Mevashel, is why a person is not allowed to use an oven on Shabbos. But the other reason is that if the oven was on, the safety feature is when you open it, the thermostat shuts it off, so that person doesn't get burnt. So that's a problem. The Shabbos mode, we discussed that. Fine. So Chazal asserted for us the isser of enveloping food on Shabbos, whether it's a pot, because they said that that process, but try the hatmana process itself, in itself is a form of helping the cooking process, and they were afraid of gufa ketuma. The isser would even apply, according to the Shulchan Aruch and Or Chaim, Simon 257, would even involve one who did that on Erev Shabbos. Okay, so a common misconception, right? If a person went ahead and he purposely took food because he wanted to be super hot and enveloped it with tinfoil, so we'd have a problem. He would not be able to, in fact, my wife once told me a recipe. I don't have much to do in my house. As far as cooking or really anything else, honestly. But one of the things I do is I make the cholent and I barbecue. I used to do other things, but as time moved on, my wife realized that they're not so good. Like, I used to make potato cookies. Yeah, that didn't work out well. Okay, fine. So, apparently, you're not supposed to, the shells aren't supposed to go into the potato cookies. I didn't know that. Anyway, so fine. So, she told me that there's our friend makes on Shabbos pargiot, right? Right? Delicious pargiot. And the way to make sure, she told me, a certain way you make it. So you cook it, the whole thing, but you don't cook it fully. And what you do is that you put it quickly into a tin. On top of the tin, you envelop it, if you will, with saran wrap, and then you put tin foil on top of it. And it actually continues the cooking process. So, new viter. Now what happens on Shabbos morning? So now Shabbos morning, you take it out, it's completely enveloped. So once you put it on top of the hot plate, I think it would be problematic if you don't have some sort of small opening in it. Most of the time when we put tinfoil on something, it's not to envelop it so that the heat is retained in it. It's because of we don't want it to spill. We want it to not get crunchy, whatever it is. But it's not for that reason, and that's why it actually would be mutter.
I thought that does cook it faster when you cover it up. Like if you're
the hand. Yeah, so that's why you would have to make sure that something a little bit was open in it. But
it's problematic with taking foil and just putting it straight over like one of those like those tin boxes and like just doing it tight, like airtight. Like,
yeah, if you're purposely doing it to yeah,
it around the edges. Like,
sure. If you're not, again, if there's no opening, if there's an opening, so we're not concerned at all because there's a way for the heat to escape. Even for challah, for example. So sometimes people will take challah and they want it to be super hot, so they totally close and then make sure there's no, and that's a problem because you're not letting the steam is staying in there and it's not that cooking it, but. So, let's get to the very interesting case over here. So it is 1995, and I am in the wonderful yeshiva of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Chanan, Specter, Bayou, and if I recall correctly, I'm not sure, am I in Rav Goldbach Shir? I'm in Rav Aaron Salvechik Shir. Anyway, I remember being in Rav Goldbach Shir for this, but I used to go to Shir Sundays and Mondays because Rav Aaron only came in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And Rav Shlomo Zalman passed away. I actually remember it very, very well. This is very strange, but one of the classes I had to take in YU was gym. So we had it was a basketball tournament, like intramurals. I had to play. So I remember it well because I never, you know, you go the first day and you see all the facilities and you go to the pool and you go to do everything that you can and then nobody ever does anything anymore. So I was playing basketball and somebody came down and told me that Rav Shlomo Zalman had passed away. So my immediate reaction was first to get dressed, but to go to Rav Goldbach's apartment. And so we were talking and he was telling amazing stories about Rav Shlomo Zalman at that point. And then he came into Shir the next morning. Everybody assumed that he would fly to Eretz Yisrael for the Levaya. And the next morning he came in and he said, last night, I don't know how it would have been possible. I'm assuming he was buried that night, but whatever. I wanted to go in for the Shiva, maybe. I'm sorry, I wanted to go in for the Shiva. That's what it was. And he said that he spoke to, I forgot which of the sons, he spoke to one of the sons, and he said that it would be much, much better for you to teach Torah. And he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something special for you. I'm going to fax you now the last tshuva that Rav Shlomo Zalman ever wrote, which was literally a few days before he passed away. He was sick for a little bit, but maybe a week before that he had written a tshuva, and it's precisely this tshuva, which now has been written in Menachem Shlomo, that discussed the problems with the krakpa. And this is actually the tshuva, and I actually have little notes on the bottom that that I had written when Rav Goldbach was going through this year. In my, you know, this is back in 1995. It was a little bit hard to read, so I even wrote, that's very interesting, that I went through it and I wrote exactly what it is. So this was the last tshuva, so this is a very, very famous, although of course, unfortunately with this tshuva, so nobody's able to go back to Rav Shlomo Zalman and ask him what exactly he meant in all different inyanim. So I wanted to summarize what exactly, what the tshuva was. So first of all, we're speaking about what you just saw, the two-piece crockpot, and the potential of there being an issue. So if we now look later on, you'll see in Mincha Shlomo, in Chelek Beis, in Simon Lamed Dalet, so there he discusses that using a two-piece crockpot is an Isser. Why? It violates Hatmana. Obviously only the Rabbanan, but it violates Hatmana. Why? Because the outer pot envelops the inner coils of the electric coils, and what? It's Isser, because it's Hatmana. There's no way for it to get out. So, this of course created a big brouhaha. Again, it's based on this tshuva over here. V'shtovtia bolet. So he says it would be better if it, some way was possible for it to be to stick out. And said that there is a mafsik b'neiyam. There's some sort of whatever it might be, but some way that there is a between the two, there is. Some sort of intermediary between the two, so it's able to breathe. It's able to come out. So here, what I wrote over here is cute. So first of all, he said it has to be a two-pot crockpot. I don't know if they make this anymore, but they used to make a crockpot that actually did not come out. It wasn't removable, right? It's not so practical. Certainly for frum people, it's almost impractical. Why? Because we know that we're not allowed to stir. Once it's on the fire, you're not allowed to stir, and therefore you're not allowed to take out. If something's on a fire, we don't allow. Sfardim are more makel, but we don't, Ashkenazim don't allow you to take the food from the fire and put it onto whatever it might be. This is an important point, just to stop for a moment. The Friday night chillin point. Friday night chillin, again, I'm talking about, I told you this story before, in another camp that I used to go to. I'm not allowed to say the name because of my contract. But in that camp, we mentioned this morning, something Kilas Yaakov. And so in that camp, we used to have Friday night chillin when I was in by the Kollel. So there used to be Friday night chillin. So everybody asked, Rabbi Willig apparently was very upset with the way that we were doing it. So in those days, it was this huge pot, almost the size of a person. How are you going to... So we know that there's a lot of different klalim that you have to have, but one of them is you have to take it off the fire. Why? Because you can't stir it. It can't be on the fire because it's a cooking. It's helping the cooking process. Somebody had to hold it. Somebody had to get it off. It was very, very... whatever. So then we explained to Rabbi Willig that this is what we're doing, and that's mutter, and the whole thing. And I remember Rabbi Willig looking at everybody going, okay, but you're stealing. That's usur, according to everybody. So we didn't understand what he meant, but obviously what he meant was is that every Shabbos day of lunch, there wouldn't be enough chulin, because we stole so much chulin Friday night. So it was kind of a good point. We didn't think of it that way. You know, we're paying so much money. Yeah, whatever. Fine. So... here in the Tshuva, so he writes, for sure you can't have a one, there's no such thing. So forget about that. Take that out of your lexicon. There's no such thing as the one. I don't even know if they make them anymore. That would be a problem. So it has to be the two. So what do you do? So he says he gives them an easy etzah. All you have to do is have some sort of intermediary between the two. So what do most people say? They put on the bottom little balls of tinfoil. You can put an empty tuna can. You know what I'm talking about? Something that will lift it up a little bit so that there is a noticeable change to get it out. So I don't know if I told you the story. Rabbi Soloski was telling the story once, and he said that he was telling this over, and unfortunately he said this idea of the tuna can, the whole thing, and the next Shabbos somebody came up to the Rabbi Soloski and said, Rabbi Soloski, thanks for nothing. He says, what do you mean? He says, I did exactly what you said. We almost had our house almost burnt down. I said, what are you talking about? He says, I put in the tuna can, the whole thing, it stood up, the whole thing, and after a number of hours, the whole thing exploded. He says, what exploded? What? He says, the tuna can, was it? I said, you kept the can with the tuna inside the thing? That's not what I meant. Empty tuna can. And it blew up. Yeah. So that's not what he meant. So you look up, I don't have a tuna can. People use rocks, you use this. So just think if you take balls of tinfoil a little bit, and you stack them up a little bit. All you need is a little bit so it could breathe and come out. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman said was helpful in doing this. It happens to be that in the Tshuva he writes something else, which I thought was very interesting. Number one, the knobs have to be, but he questioned whether or not the electrical outlet also has to be covered. And I wrote that over here, that Rav Shlomo Zalman said that would be better to have. I've never seen that as a chumra that people actually do. You know, I haven't been in every home in the world, but nonetheless, it's an interesting idea, because maybe that's also grufu chtuma. Why? Maybe a person is going to say, oh my God, the chulin's burning, and then quickly take the plug out, and then it won't burn anymore. So that's a chumra as well. The way that I was surprised to see it presented in a Kol Torah article by Rabbi Jachter a number of years ago, maybe many years ago, and maybe could be misled in reading the Tshuva, is that I don't think, and Rav, certainly the way that Rav Golich presented it, and I have it in front of me, the Tshuva, the handwritten Tshuva, I don't think he asserted it. I think he explained why it's problematic, but if you can get around those problems, I think it would be mutter. Like we were talking about the hot plate, where Shlomo Zalman in the footnote of Shmir Shal Kachosah was not a fan of the hot plate. Right? That's true. So what did we say you had to do? According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, because the Moroccans used to cook on top of it. I actually, somebody came up to me after the shiur, said something fascinating to me. Was somebody here? That Rav Shlomo Zalman used to, the reason why he knew about the Moroccans is that he used to, every...
Well, your friend from
Pina. Oh, yeah, thank you. Ron Yaish. Yeah. So right, thank you. Ron Yaish. Ron Yaish told me that so he told me that the reason why he knew so much about the Moroccans is because he used to summer with the Moroccans. Told a great story. He said that every Rav needs a little bit of vacation time, but if you're in Rishon Zalman Arbach, you know, where are you going to go? The French Alps, you know, where do you go? So Beit Chassidish Rebbe's, they go all around Switzerland, this and that. But he wanted to go to a place and nobody would know where he is. So he used to go to Bat Ayin. No, not Bat Ayin, I'm sorry. To, I forgot now. Rosh Ayin, thank you. Rosh Ayin, Rav Sitran's in-laws live. We go to Rosh Ayin, it's a big Moroccan community there. Our yeshiva actually goes there on a trip. All very Moroccan, Taimani, Moroccans. And he used to go there. And the basic Jews didn't really know who he was. So he would be able to spend time learning without being bothered. It just reminded me. So that's how we knew about this, the cooking on top of it. And we said that according to Rosh Hashanah, you had to turn over a pot. So a lot of people do this. When they have the hot plate, they turn over an empty pan in order to fulfill this. So you can't tell that Rav Shlomo Zalman asked the hot plate. So I think the same thing over here would apply. It just reminded me of a story many years ago, just about a rav. And there was one. There used to be a hotel up in the Catskills called the Homewack, very famous OU hotel for many, many years. So my in-laws invited us to Shabbaton. My father-in-law worked for many years in Yeshiva Flapa. She said, "Why don't you come on the Shabbaton? You're all fun, you know." Wasn't true, but we came on the Shabbaton. So when we get there, quite noticeably, you know, there's boys and girls and, you know, the whole Kansamaisa. And there's a noticeable, you know, which of these people don't belong. There's somebody who really doesn't belong. And he has a long white beard. And I can't figure out. I said, "Wow, they have a mashkiach here that's still applying." So that's what I thought. So we get there. So I thought it was a mashkiach. I was very impressed. Wow, chashav azachim. So I went up to him, stupidly, I should have gone up to him, and I said, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem, are you the Mashkiach here?" So he said to me, "I'm not the Mashkiach here." So I said, "Here, what?" So he said, of course, he, you know, like many great rabbis say, I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, what's your name?" "My name, Kahaneman. I'm Kahaneman." So I'm like, "Okay, so what?" I said, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem." I said, "Shalom Aleichem." And then, thank God, quickly came over one of the great rabbeim in Rabbi Prague, and he said, "You know who this is?" I said, "Of course I know who he is." "What do you think? I don't know who he is." "I have no idea." And so it was Rav Kahaneman, who was the Menahel for many, many years of Panovich Yeshiva. His grandfather was the Panovich Rav. So why did he come? So I said, May I ask you, why? What are you doing here?" So he said to me, "May I ask you, what are you doing here? Do you not follow Halach?" "No, I'm kidding." So I'll tell you in a second. So he explained to me, he said, "Listen, I'm here fundraising back and forth for Shabbos. I just need Menuchas HaNefesh. I just wanted to be able to sit and learn. So I didn't know what to do." So a friend of mine said, "You know what? Why don't you go up to the Catskills, to one of these hotels, find a place that has a minion? Nobody will know who you are." Turned out to be true. So he called the Homewack and he said, "Yeah, we actually have a minion. And Yeshiva Flatbush was coming." So he said, "Chashev, Yeshiva Gedolah Flatbush, you know, something Chashev." Yeah. It turned out not to be that exactly. I have a friend, I'm not going to mention his name, Dr. Kallis, who went to Yeshiva Flatbush. So he used to say, Dr. Kallis said sometimes that, "I went to Yeshiva in Flatbush." You know, people don't like to say that. So fine. So the Yeshiva Flatbush, he said, "Listen, just between me and you, and now all of the YU Torah land, can you just tell me what goes on here exactly? What are the heterim that you rely on? Because I don't care about the mechitza, it's fine." He says, "Are going to be any women singing at any point?" So I said to him, "What do you think, we're in camp?" Fill in the blank. I said, "No." I said, "No, no, no, I don't, I called the Rabbi Prague over, and they made sure that everything was perfect." It was a very nice Shabbos, because I was able to talk to him a little bit exactly what he didn't want, but sorry. So in any case, so you have to know, tachlis, what I was saying about what the halachas are. So that's where Shlomo Zalman. So here I don't think that he asserted it. So Rabbi Jachter presented it like he asserted it, but there are a lot of posts who say that it's mutter. So I think under the conditions it would be mutter. And that's why, certainly for Anazim, we're very makel. In the same Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says that if there is some sort of, as he writes over here, Mamash is what it says, Mafsik Benayim. Right? There's some sort of intermediate, even a little bit, so that's not the Isser. So again, you have the challah, you enveloped and enwrapped it, and you leave a little bit of it open. That's exactly what would be a mutter. And therefore, that wouldn't be Usser. So, what's interesting is that Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this exact opinion. Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe, in Chedlik Aleph, Simon, Sam Sadik, he says a similar idea of this problem, but he thinks that it's not hatmana. So it's interesting, just as far as generally how we hold. On Shabbos, I was talking to somebody. I wasn't talking to somebody. Okay, fine, I won't lie to you. I was eating in somebody's cabin, and they brought out sodas. They brought out cans of soda. So I love cans of soda. In Eretz Yisrael, cans of soda are like 5 shekel each. Mm-hmm. So it's always a pleasure to have, especially when somebody's paying for it. So they asked me if I wanted a soda. So I said, "Yes, I would like a soda." And they gave it to me. And I said, I would like a soda. And they said, okay, so open it. And I said, I can't. So they said, oh, you want us to be your Shabbos guy? I said, got to hold this guy. So I explained to them, there are different shittos. I said, yes. So there are different shittos when it comes to opening a can on Shabbos. Right? There are those that are macher. There are those that make it. So I might be wrong about this. I apologize. I didn't research this topic just from my memory. So I think Rosh Shlomo Zalman was Mekel. Rosh Shlomo Zalman is, of course, Mekel when it comes to opening a plastic bottle like one of these on Shabbos. So I think also he was Mekel. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we could ask Rav Goldberg. Rav Moshe was not. So, you know, who didn't follow Rosh Shlomo Zalman? He's such a great gadol in this instance. Because we want to open cans. Yeah. So I did it for many years. I'll be honest. I did it for many years. And I used to have a very beautiful minhag. Very similar to Avram Avinu. You can write this down. Very similar to Avram Avinu. I too wanted to be like Avram Avinu. So when I used to live in Bergenfield, we had a park two doors away from our house. I used to have this minhag. I would take out sodas, cans of soda, and I would give it out to people that I knew. Usually my friends only. And give it to them as a nice thing. You have a cold drink in the park. Nice. Very good. I don't charge them, by the way. Only after Shabbos. So I used to do this. And the problem was is that every single week, we also had the great chus of having Rabbi Soloski, who would come to watch his kids in the park. That would usually turn out to people feeling bad for him and saying, we'll watch your kids, Rebbe. And then he would come turn to me and goes, I don't want to walk all the way back to my house because then my wife's telling me that I'm not watching the kids. Can I sit and learn in your house? So this would usually happen weekly. So he would see me going back and forth. So one week, I don't know why I asked him this. I said, Rebbe Soloski, do you have a problem with this, that I do the cans of this and that? He said, Rav Moshe says, it's probably better not to do it. From then on, I said, you know what, I don't think it's usher, and that's why I let other people. I think it's wonderful. I even have in my own house a Shabbos guy who opens up cans for me. And if you hold it, it's mutter. I felt bad that Rabbi Soloski had told me that it's better not to do it, so I try not to do it. But people do open cans. I see here in camp, it's like almost like a minig yisrael kedinhu in this camp. Everybody seems to open cans of Shabbos. There are different shittos. So I think it's interesting just that everybody caught on to this last psak of Shlomo Zalman, and I don't know, at least all my friends, all are machmir, and they put the balls in the thing, and everybody does that. But Rav Moshe actually mastered it offhand without all this fancy dancy stuff. It's easy. It's very, very interesting. Rav Moshe, you know, and others, the reason why it should be mutter, and that's really the crux of the question, is that there are Rishonim, the Shibudei Aleket, Rabbeinu Simcha, say that the Isser of Hatman, or really of Shia, is permitted if the item can only be eaten the next day. So if I make my cholent, and everyone knows the cholent is for Shabbos day, so there's nothing here that's going to happen that's going to help the cooking process here. It's for the next day, and we actually have this din, interestingly enough, when it comes to cholent, right? There are two ways for us to make cholent, right? You can either make cholent the way it should be made, which is right before Shabbos, meaning on Friday morning. You can make it Thursday night, I don't care. You make it Friday morning, and then right before Shabbos starts, so even though it's not delicious, it's machal ben zrisoy, and it's mutter. The other way is, I forgot to make the cholent. So we actually had this story a number of months ago in a certain house I was zeicha to be in for Shabbos. And I was very concerned because I was in the house all Friday and I saw that there was no cholent. I saw there was a cholent pot out and nobody was making cholent. And this is obviously a very big concern. Number one, you worry, are they shomer Shabbos if they're not making cholent on Shabbos? And so I didn't know what was going on. So I asked the host and I said to her, who's my sister, I said, is somebody making cholent? She says, no, don't worry. My nephew is an expert cholent maker. So he says, he's making the cholent. Good. So I'm waiting for the cholent to be made. He said, ooh, now we have a Shabbos problem. Meaning? It's not going to be cooked. Baruch Hashem, this is the Shek second Shita. So when he came home, so now it was, let's say, 2 hours before Shabbos. He says, don't worry, I'm making the cholent now. I said, you know what? You can't make the cholent now. He says, what do you mean? He says, it's better to make the cholent right before Shabbos. Because then, at least according to one of the shitas, there's no chashash of any guf chatuma, anything's going to happen, even though it's not meant to shay, because you just made it right before Shabbos, so we matter it, because it's impossible for you to eat it on Friday night, it's only going to be ready for Shabbos morning. This would only apply to something that is generally, can only be eaten the next day. That's basically very similar to the idea that we're saying over here. And because of that, there wouldn't be a problem of hatman shia in this case. The Shmuel Elekhet quotes a Rishon, Rabbeinu Binyamin. The Mordechai shares the same idea, and he says, the Rabban says the same thing, that Hatmana is allowed as long as it's something that's clearly set aside for the next day. And the Ramah, Meforish, quotes this opinion. Again, the Beis Yosef doesn't. The Beis Yosef thinks that this is not the normative Shita. It's a Shita in the Rishonim, but it's not a normative Shita. So again, for Ashkenazim, it seems to be much less problematic. The next question, in itself, is another Machlokes Rishonim. And that Machlokes Rishonim is whether or not the food is physically touching the coals or not. If it's not covered, is that considered to be Hatmana? Is it only when it's the food itself? For example, Shulchan Aruch paskins that, this is based on what the Rush says in Gemara and Shabbos, the Tur, the Ran says the same thing, the Magen Mishnah, based on the Rambam, he thinks this is the way to read the Rambam, that if the pot is touching the coals directly, it's forbidden to do Hatmana. However, Zakta Rama again, and he's again Mekel, says there are those who permit it. The same Mordechai that we quoted, and he quotes the Hagaris Maimonos as well, the Orzarua, say the minhag is that we're not machmir on this. However, besides Rav Shlomo Zalman's Shita, the Chazon Ish notably argued with the Shita of the Rama, and he says that a person should follow the Shita of the Shulchan Aruch. Some people say that is this considered to be directly on the coals, in our case of the crock pot? As long as there's some sort of small airspace that is able to get through, says the Mishnah Brura and the Chazon Ish and the Shulchan Aruch Harav, says that it would be mutter. Rav Avadya Yosef in Chazon Avadya says that he thinks the Shulchan Aruch does not permit this, meaning there would have to be much more of a noticeable airspace than a small airspace. And again, it seems that Rav Shlomo Zalman is machmir in later from after he passed away. So the Shulchan Shlomo elaborates on this inyan and says that the airspace in itself is not considered to be enough of an airspace that interferes between the coals and the pot, and therefore he thinks it would be problematic. Again, in my humble opinion, I think that there is a way to get around this as long as it's lifted up in a considerable way. However, Sof Devarenu, Hakol Nishma, is that Rav Vosner, in the Shevet HaLevi, I quoted Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's quoted in Otsar Shabbos, based on the Ramah, says that a crockpot can be used on Shabbos. Rav Avadya is quoted in Chazon Avadya, says that based on the Shulchan Aruch, he believes that this is fake over here, and as long as there's a small airspace, and you cover the knob, and there's a reminder, he thinks it would be mutter. Rabbi Jachter quotes that he spoke to Rav Chacham Avadya about this, and he told him that he could use a crockpot for cooking food on Shabbos, because of this Sveik-sveika. Because if maybe a small airspace is okay, small airspace is okay, and as long as there's a reminder that there's not going to be Grufus Ketuma, and you cover the knob, that would be okay. So, the problem that we now still have is, this would be great if you only eat cholin on Shabbos morning, but Baruch Hashem, many of us are chazers, and we want to eat Friday night also. Friday night cholin. So how do we get around, how do we able to eat cholent on Friday night? Now besides for the important and noteworthy klalim that you have to have in order to use food, to take food out on Shabbos and to return it, you know, the things like holding it with your hand and having in mind you're going to put it back and has to say, yeah, to let us bow, v'chulu. So besides for that, how do we get around hatmana? So in this case, why wouldn't there be a problem of Shema Yechata B'Gecholim? That seems to me it would be a typical case. So one way of getting around it is that, and this is what we do, we have to have a reminder. We have to have a blech. How do you make a blech on a crock pot? So the easiest way is to line it with tinfoil on the outside. So if that's the only reason, if you ever see people's crock pots with liners on it of tinfoil, that's the only reason. It's because they have in mind, for argument's sake, this cholent pot we were making for Shabbos day, we were going to have all have cholent after shul. So we're going to make kiddush rest. So it would be mutter to do that. You wouldn't need to have that piece of tinfoil because you don't need a reminder about returning it. If you're only eating it for Shabbos morning, it's much less problematic. Furthermore, we can argue that Hatmani is a problem, as we said before, because his intention is to eat the Shabbos day, so he's not worried about it when it's cooking. He knows it's going to be. That's the way crockpots work. That's the whole point of a crockpot. We had last week an interesting crockpot. I never saw a crockpot like this before. It had hours on it. When do you want this item to be cooked? 6, 8, 16 hours, you know, forever. I don't know. It had all these buttons on it. So according to that, so as long as I press the button that says on it 16, I know that after 16 hours it'll be cooked. If I press 4, it'll be cooked up to 4 hours. Fine. Somebody wanted to argue. He asked me the following question once. He said, what about many of us make now cholent in cholent bags? So he asked me, maybe cholent bag in itself is no hatman anymore. Why? So even here happens to be it's cute. On this top, there's actually a hole in it, so the air can come out. But the truth is, most of these wouldn't be hatmana either, because the air is able to escape. There is another, as you know, we have like dozens of crockpots here. So there's another crockpot that I saw. Did you see this one? It closes and snaps.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. Is that more problematic? But this guy asked me, he said that with the bag inside, maybe hatmana bechlal, because of the fact that the bag is not sturdy at all, and it's like, you know, swooshed around. The problem is that the inner thing is the hatmana, and that's heating it up, and I think that in itself is a problem. Fine. So, where does that leave us? So, it leaves us with the following summary. Number one, when it comes to cooking food on Shabbos, cholent on Shabbos, so you have two possibilities. Rav Avadya actually discusses this as well, and he says it's permissible to place raw food in a crock pot right before Shabbos, as long as, because the intention is to cook it for Shabbos meal, and therefore there would be no issue of increasing or decreasing the flame. But you must cover the knob if you do this, so that you can't control the speed of the cooking. Because you made it right before Shabbos, maybe there'll be a problem now and it won't be ready. You decide you want to eat lunch at 11 o'clock. Oh no, I thought we were eating at 1. So he says it has to be covered to remind the person. So therefore, you could put a little piece of tape on it, or pour a small piece of aluminum foil, or take the knob off bechlal to do that. Somebody told me, I think he left, one of the guys that left, I think, told me, very strange. No. Somebody, I think maybe that's here, that the rabbi has all of his knobs. That's a chumer ba'alma. That in order not to come to a case of grufa chatuma, that everybody hands their knobs in this shul to the rabbi of the shul. Can you imagine he's got a box of knobs? I don't know what he's doing with those knobs. Right? that's really a chumra. I don't know. He should hand in other things like iPhones and stuff like that. Fine. So fine. Still, we have to keep in mind that Rosh Shlomo Zalman did have serious reservations about it. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, besides for that, I think, again, if you read the tshuva, although it's not as mashma from Mincha Shlomo, would allow it under the circumstances we discussed. Rav Yashav, in Otzar HaShabbos, is quoted in his name that he said he didn't like crockpots. That being said, there are those that say they spoke to Rav Yashav about this, and it's not true. That this mimer that's written in the Otzar HaShabbos is actually not true. I have here some rabbi who said that. I think it's Rabbi Jachter who quoted. He said that my friend, Rav Ophir Malka, showed Rav Yashav the pot, and Rav Yashav permitted it in accordance with the Rama. He said, I don't see why it would be a problem. Although the Otzar HaShabbos said that, he said, this is always a problem with Rav Yashav. And obviously other scheme as well, where somebody explains to them the mitzvahs, he asks and maybe signs a letter, and he never actually saw a crackpot in his life. Why is that such a problem? Of course it's a problem, because you know, nobody actually, facts on the ground, actually ever introduced him to my friend called Crackpot. There's a story once about a guy who's sitting in the Rav Elyashev's ante room waiting for him, and it's a grown man, and he's building a Lego house. He's like playing with Lego. So there was somebody there. He says, "This guy's a nut job. Maybe we should go up to him and say, you know, Rav Shlomo Zalman is for serious shilas, like not, you know, like Nabuch, it might be disturbing to him." So this is one of those like other side of the story, you know, Don LeKov's chut stories. So this guy decides, "I don't know what to do. Should I say something? Should I not say something? Maybe he's getting a special bracha because he's, you know, mentally disturbed. I don't know." And he decides that it's the right thing to do. So of course he goes up to him and as we, you know, "Hello, how are you?" He's like, "Shalom Aleichem, how are you?" And he says, "Are you going to see Rav Shlomo, Rav Elyashev?" So he says, "Yes, I'm going to see Rav. Why are you talking to me like this?" He's like, and he points his Lego. He's like, "Oh," he goes, "I'm so sorry." He says, "I have a unique shaila about if a mezuzah is required in my house. So what am I going to do? I told Rav Elyashev to come to my house. I can't explain it to him. I tried to draw a picture. I said the easiest way is if I took my son's Lego and I show exactly how the room is shaped and tell him if it's a chayv mezuzah. That's a shtark, that's a spitz. That's something very, very good." So you have to know the poskim. We discussed before about the Indian hair and how I think it for sure, I know that what was told to some of the poskim just wasn't metzias, what was true. And when Ari and Ari wrote their famous article and said, "Yeah, but they didn't even go to India. We went to India. We saw what was going on there. There's no hakravas karbanos and all these things they wrote." So you have to know the metzias. Metzias is very, very important halacha. That's why we're here, Rabbi Yisai. We talk about halacha a lot. So we try to find out what are the metzias, what do people write, what are people about it. So to go ahead and paskin halacha, basically, here Rav Shlomo Zalman writes the last tshuva he wrote. He knew exactly what a crackpot was. They said Rav Shlomo Zalman used to study. It was unbelievable when he would get different items and study, of course, his famous book on electricity. Just studying and knowing and doing it was truly unbelievable to know that. The books he would get, not even secular works apparently, to understand how things are made and how things are done, so he understood how to paskin halacha. That's a true sign of a posek. In any case, that's the Pia Shmuas. So anyway, there are two formidable shitas here. We generally, I don't know, I think the Olam is maybe out of respect for Rav Shlomo Zalman, this being his last tshuva, so many people do follow this chumra and add to it. I don't know people just say outright you shouldn't use a crockpot, because I think there's a way to get around it without a problem, just to lift it up a bit. The lech that comes out of it is more for returning food on Shabbos. I think that it's very notable that the knob should be covered. I just want to say one last thing, since I think this will be our last year on Hilchos Bishul. And that is that a person needs to be extremely careful if he's going to somebody else's house. Right, and there's one person in the room I can imagine would call me with this question and be like, "Rebbe, I went to somebody's house and it was treif, right? It was treif. They're all treif. I'm never eating there again." So why do I say that? Because you have to be very, very careful. I once ate at the home of somebody. I always remember this. It was such a great Musar Haskil. And I ate at their home, and I went to go wash. And when I was washing, I noticed that the way they heated up food on Shabbos was, I didn't think, quite questionable at all. I thought it was Mamash Aser. And through discussions that we were having during the meal, I'm like, "Oh my God, I cannot eat in this house anymore." Like, why? So there were a few notable things. One, my wife was being her usual nice self, and my wife said, "Wow, this rice is delicious. How do you make the rice?" "I got to get the recipe." She's like, "You got to get the recipe? I'll be right back." She comes out with a box of rice-a-roni, and she says, "This is the thing." And I'm like, "It's not kosher. It doesn't have much kosher on it. What's going on here?" Fine.
Wait,
was
it dry rice or?
No, it's flavored rice. It had what some people would call hashkacha, but I don't consider it hashkacha.
Like Hebrew National?
No, it's flavored. It's flavored. So the next one, I think, answered to high authority. And the next was, the guy said to me, "Where do you work?" I told him, "Oh, I work in the city," and this. He goes, "Oh my God, you're so lucky. My favorite restaurant's there." And he names me the name of the restaurant, Buddha Buddha. And I'm like, "Oh, he's mirror." So this guy goes to this restaurant. You know, the rabbi's like, you know, I don't know. But not reliable in my opinion. So I went to my rabbi, Rabbi Neuberger, and I said, "Rabbi Neuberger, just for the future, like, how do you get around this? Are you allowed to lie to them? Are you allowed to make up stories? Can you give us das, the whole thing?" So he says to me, "I'm sorry, what's the problem?" And I explained to him. So he said, first of all, you should be aware that that is a shita by the Beis Yosef, holds from it. There are Sfardim who say that it's mutter, whatever the Indian was, the Jewish. I'm like, they're not Sfardim. They actually don't even look Jewish. They have blonde hair and blue eyes. They're not, there's no way they're Sfardim. So he said, it doesn't matter. As long as it's a formidable shita, we shouldn't embarrass people when it comes to Shabbos. Maybe that rabbi told him that, you don't know. If it's clearly, like, they come out and they say, okay, great, we're done with the challah. How does everybody want their steaks made? My husband's barbecuing in the back. So then we know we have a problem. And the answer is medium well. But, that clearly is a problem. But when there's formidable shitas, you gotta be really careful. This is like the typical Shana Aleph problem. Guys come back from Shana Aleph and the first thing they say to their parents, you're a bunch of goyim, you don't follow the Torah. I can't believe that you use a crackpot on Shabbos. Her husband told me that it's awesome. And if you have a good parent, I love it. You have a good parent, the parent would be like, really? It's awesome. Who's this Rabbi Hartstein? Let me look. He's got Shirim and Yotara. He's chashav. He says, well, he doesn't know how to read halacha. And he starts to show you. Here's where Moshe finds his psak, and he follows schools, if you will. And he tells you, you can't. Good. That's what. So right. Nobody should do that. I'll just tell you one last story. Just the point is that a person should be very, very careful in knowing what the halacha is. You go to someone's house and they're using a crock pot and they don't use it. It's fine. This foreign bullshit doesn't allow it. Fine. I said, I'm going to tell you a last story. So it happened this year. It's funny. So we're just telling about when people come to the yeshiva. So I was telling a story that I think I said at the Oneg on Friday night. So I was saying that it's always funny. They're not really prepared. They don't know what to ask. They don't know what to do. There was one father who came. Mamish, this guy was holding. It's great. So unfortunately, it's a shame that I have to be the person who's the greeter. So I'm certainly not the biggest Talmud Chacham out there. And so he said to me, you, one of the classes that I taught, how is it taught? Tell me how you would teach that class. So I don't teach the class. Said, okay, but you're still a rabbi here. So I started giving him a pill on him to know about it. And I was very surprised. He's with a son. And he says, this is 100% true. So he says, I'll tell you the truth. I don't think you know how to read the Rambam. Just like that. So I said, it's not fair. I started listing off other rabbis you can talk to. I should have said, who's the Rambam? But I didn't say that. That would have been funny. So I get, when people annoy me, so my general rule is, now we have a fight, okay? So I said, good, let's go see the Rambam together. So I showed him, and it happened to me, this was just like, totally a fluke, mamish. I said, I see how you could read it that way, but my Rebbe Rav Aaron Soloveitchik doesn't read it that way. And I have a book at home called Perush Mata Aaron. I'll show you that he doesn't read it that way. What do you want me to do? I said, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, I'm sorry, this way we read it. Well, he was wrong. And I said, whoa, dude, you can school me all you want, that's fine. It's Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Watch it, man. That's like the story about that. What? No. The whole thing was stupid. The kid was going to another formidable, wonderful yeshiva. He was never got. I don't know why he even came to look at the yeshiva. I was because the father wanted to try to school me, but Baruch Hashem, Hashem taught him his lesson. Don't try to school every heart. So anyway, that's the idea. Is that professors should be careful what's halacha, what's not halacha, even when we're talking and learning. This morning we spoke about Shalom Birchu Batorah Tchila. I didn't mention this. But one of the inyanim was that a person didn't treat Torah respectfully. That the only reason why they were learning Tzach is to try to chap their chavrusa. That's what the Midrash tells us. That when they were learning together, they hated each other so much. They just wanted to hear what you had to say. So I got upshal. If I don't know how to read a Rambam, I don't know Rambam. I don't know Gemaras. But if you're learning and you say a good pshat, I'm able to say, okay, obviously you just don't know anything. You're an Amaret. Here, let me show you what the Rambam says, and then you feel bad. That's why they knew Torah, intellectual pursuit, so they could school people. That's terrible. So to be very careful. We learned about the Baruch Hashem different in Yonim and Bishul. Let's be extremely careful with how we treat it and what's also. Ask a Rav and say, you might be surprised, but the Rav will be like, no, under those circumstances, it's actually Mutter. Even though he's not Ashkenaz, even though it might be Mutter. So a person has to be very, very, very careful.